Welcome, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Alex Mirachon has joined us today, everybody. And this is Jenny. Welcome to Miami Lit Podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
No. Me. Yeah, you and all those that you represent. Yeah, right. Exactly. So let's just dive right in and start at the beginning.
Okay.
How old were you when you came to Miami?
Actually, I was 14 turning 15.
That's like a formative age, I feel like. So you're like right in the middle of the teenage chaos.
I almost didn't make it. I remember, so I came from Romania and yeah. It's not humid ever. Literally never felt humidity in my life. And we came and it was a long plane ride and I got off the plane and I remember stepping out of the airport and the heat just hits me. And I start sweating and I can't breathe. And I'm telling my mom, I need to go back home. I can't breathe here. I was panicking. It was really crazy. And then apparently 4 weeks later, I was like, I don't want to go back home. Let's move here.
Oh my God. Because you guys came to visit first?
Yeah, my dad was working here for a couple of years and we were supposed to just come and visit. And we visited for 8 weeks. And then we started the proceedings to like get citizenship and all that. Which took another 10 years.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a process. But for now sure. You love it here.
Yeah. You know, I left Miami. I was in Florida. I wasn't actually even in Miami. I was in Florida in Vero Beach for 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then we moved, a hurricane destroyed where my dad was working. And we moved to Georgia. And I finished my high school in a tiny little town there and then went to UGA. And then I spent a long time in Georgia, went to New York, D.C., L.A., traveled the world for about a year and a half, and now I'm back in Miami.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So since you've seen a lot, what's been the biggest difference here compared to all the other places?
Well, I think right now, in the state of everything, Miami is like the only place in the U.S. that makes sense. Business-wise, yeah. Community-wise, culture-wise. And I remember 4 years ago, I reconnected with my childhood best friend who we grew up dancing together, and he still competes. So he came to Miami, and I visited him, and I remember everything shifted. The way that I was doing business shifted. I actually divorced after that trip.
Oh.
I literally turned my life upside down because I came here, and I realized that he's enjoying his life. He's following his passion. He's still doing the things that like we always loved and did together. And I kind of took the road of this is what society expects of me. So I'm gonna conform to that. I'm gonna get a wife. I'm gonna get a good, you know, have a good business and make money and have all these status and
the picket fence. Dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All that. But I was unhappy.
Oh, wow.
So it took coming back to Miami. And I remember there's a video somewhere out there, and we were just dancing and singing in the street, and I hadn't done that in years. And that's when I was like, you know, one day I'm going to retire in Miami. I didn't think it'd be this early that I'd come back, but, you know, that's when it kind of called back.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so crazy how, like, a simple experience can put so much perspective.
Right.
Yeah. That's incredible. And I'm happy for you
that
it happened. Because can you imagine not having that experience and living a life of just, you know, going with the... I don't even want to say going with the flow because that's a good thing, but just living without purpose.
Yeah. I went back and we had this really nice apartment in Tribeca, 2-bedroom overlooking the river, all the things. And I was sitting on the ledge and I just started crying. And my ex-wife was like, why are you crying? And I was like, I just feel like I have no purpose. She's like, but you have your business and, you know, this is good and this is good. And we go on vacations. And I'm like, yes, but
on paper.
Yeah, on paper it all looks good, but I don't feel fulfilled with any of it.
Yeah.
So it was nice to take that approach and observe that then instead of like just continue with the rest of my life.
Right. Wow. So you went, how was walking away from everything?
I think it was easy because I knew it was the right thing.
Yeah.
Like the whole, you know, being married and having that business and everything was so educational.
Mm.
I learned about who I am, what I want, what I don't want, where my boundaries are, what's important to me. And then I took all those lessons and stepped away. And we had an amicable separation.
Yeah.
Actually, after that, I started looking for people to buy my business. I used to have a trampoline park in Athens, Georgia. And it was super fun.
I was going to say, that sounds so cool.
I enjoyed it. And it was on autopilot because I was living in New York and this was running. And I would just have to go visit maybe once a month. But I found someone that was local that could enjoy it more and be there more for its growth. And then we closed that deal March 9th, 2020. So like 4 days before COVID started.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's crazy.
It was crazy timing.
Yeah. Talk about divine timing.
Right.
That you were able, as the world is entering to this chaos, you're kind of like building your foundation.
Right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was really cool. And I remember everything shut down and I was like, this is good. I have a cushion. I don't have to worry about anything. And I was stuck in my apartment. I was in DC at that point, and I had this tiny studio with 250 square feet, a Murphy bed, like everything was tiny, but it was perfect for just me and my puppy. I have a little Yorkie. And all I did every day was I woke up at the same time. I had like a morning routine. I meditated. I walked him. I exercised. I made my bulletproof coffee. I would journal. I would read. Like, it was really good to just, yeah,
I
do.
Me too.
I love it.
Oh my God. We have so much in common. Sorry I interrupted you. It just caught me by surprise because not a lot of people journal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah. We need to change that.
I think that's why it's so important that this project is built on a bedrock of wellness.
Yeah.
Because it's important to get everything that's in your head on paper, right?
Yeah. I always say there's nothing like facing yourself on paper.
Yeah.
And it could be hard, but it's so, the benefits are just so amazing, you know?
Yeah. I was at this summit called Fit for Service in Austin a couple weeks ago. And one of the exercises we did one day was a stream of consciousness journaling. Good. And they were just like, you know, kind of gave us a little bit of road to think about. And then we just went to town for like 10, 15 minutes. And the stuff that comes out is just surprising.
Yeah.
It's stuff that I hadn't thought about since I was a kid.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I think everybody should pick that habit up for sure.
Yeah. Even if it's just 5 minutes. Yeah. You don't need a long time. Yeah.
No.
You just need just a few minutes to just empty the wastebasket that's right up here.
Yeah.
And who knows what comes out. It could be great things or not. But at least they're no longer living or taking up space.
Yeah, it's going to take it off your plate.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you journal every day?
No.
How do you go about it? What's your approach?
So currently what I'm sort of revisiting now, I used to meditate. I had like a really strict Vipassana meditation. So it was like full silence and it was 30 minutes to an hour twice a day.
Wow.
And then that wasn't sustainable, especially with travel, because you always go to bed at different times, you stay up all night or whatever it is. So I found this new style of meditation called Ziva.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it's this amazing woman, Emily Fletcher from New York. So she kind of incorporated meditation with manifestation and with mindfulness. So it's super simple. You don't need any audio. You don't need anything. It's 15 minutes twice a day. It's still twice a day because she says we accumulate so much throughout the day that you need that second time to like lower the total capacity of stress that you have.
Wow, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm on day 13 of that, of the training. Yeah. It's a 15-day training.
And you're obviously seeing results.
I like it. Yeah. I think it's really cool. You know, at first she tells you, she's like, don't make any big life decisions while you're doing this training because a lot of stuff comes up, right? And I thought, oh, nothing's coming up for me. Like, this is just normal. But I'm finding myself like noticing new things or like fighting with people. And I'm like, wow, this is interesting. You'd expect to be all zen. But in reality, like things are coming up that you haven't processed.
So that you've had in the back for a while.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. Okay, I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll send it to you.
That's interesting. Very, very interesting. So to go back to a little bit of your journey. So you're an immigrant. How do you feel that experience has had an impact, an effect on how you navigate life now?
Well, I think between being an immigrant and between specifically in Romania, communism had fell the year after I was born. Wow. So it still felt, even though I didn't grow up in communist time, it still felt like it was a lot of that was still left over.
I mean, I was going to say it takes time right. to kind of like wash all that away from society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we still didn't have access to like most fruit that didn't grow in the countries, like bananas or oranges or stuff like that. That was like Christmas presents, and chocolate from other countries and TV and cartoons and stuff like that. Games, everything was kind of shut down and limited, right? But looking back, what I appreciate about that time and what I enjoy about that time and what I'm thankful for is being happy with the things that you had.
Yeah.
And now coming to America, which you have everything, you have access to everything, you have the capacity to like become anything. Sometimes we just keep on wanting more and more and more. But I think looking back and seeing people that are so happy just living in the country with, you know, their three chickens and, yeah. you know, their yeah. fresh eggs and
you
living off the land.
You just described my parents.
Yeah. And they're probably happy, right?
Oh, they love it. Yeah. yeah. They walked to, you know, they had a business here in the city. They sold that. They retired in their farm. And that's exactly what they do.
That's amazing.
You know, they grow their own fruit. They have their chickens. They even had cows at one point.
That's nice.
But they were getting too emotionally attached. Mm. It was becoming a problem.
I would too, yeah. yeah.
They love it. They yeah. love it.
And also like rebuilding, the idea of rebuilding. My parents, so my grandpa had the very first business license that was issued by the city after communism fell. Because you couldn't have a business during communism.
Yeah, of
which
course.
Is crazy, right? So he had the first one and he had a driving school. And then he had an auto parts store and whatever, hotels and bars and all sorts of stuff. And then my mom became a single mom whenever I was about 2 or 3. And she was a nurse at the time, but that wasn't enough to like support the yeah. family, basically. And so my grandpa gave her a store, like an auto parts store. And she knew nothing about auto parts. But she sort of built that into like a mini, you know, I think she had maybe 5 or 6 stores when we left the country.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So
and
it
like,
runs in your blood. This,
100%.
This business minded.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
My grandma left. She used to work for a government ran bookstore, whatever. Those don't exist here. But she quit that to open a business. So kind of everybody had a business.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, my mom would just take me around town to like go count inventory and buy stuff for the businesses and have meetings and go to banks and all this stuff. So I feel like I grew up. I remember at 3, I made my first business cards out of like decoupage, like magazines
That's
and stuff.
Awesome.
And I was handing it to people. So I think I always knew that. But when we left Romania, we left all that behind because none of it was transferable. So at first, my dad could only work when we moved here, and he was an engineer back home, and here he was a waiter, because that's just how it transfers.
Yeah.
And
it's
my mom
so
couldn't work.
Right.
Yeah, and she couldn't really speak English, so she went to ESOL classes, and then it almost drove her crazy having to stay at home after working her whole life and being on the you know road doing things her whole life. And then it was really interesting rebuilding all of that, like
yeah.
feeling like we were well off in Romania and then coming here and just being at the bottom. We lived in this tiny little duplex and like all of our furniture was like hand-me-downs. Like I had a pink dresser and like, you know, all this stuff. But we were still happy. And put in perspective, like lifestyle in Romania of, you know, upper middle class, let's call it, was still more challenging than like the lowest of the low in the US. I remember when my dad would get paid, we would go to TJ Maxx and we'd have like, you know, $20 allowance to like buy whatever we wanted. It was like the most exciting thing in the world because
yeah.
it was so often compared to like buying clothes once, even as a rich person in Romania. So it just gives you a perspective.
It really does.
Yeah.
And it reminds you of like really what you're made of.
Right.
Right. Because like you said, you, in your country, you had a certain status that you had worked for, and now here it's like you're back to zero.
Right.
That's so hard. But then you do it again, and you do it as many times as you need to do it, and it just reminds you, like, you got this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. And the fact that you're able to live, like, with so much less than you think you can.
Right.
You know, we think we need all the luxuries and this and that. But in reality,
I think that the essence of the human spirit is, there's no better way of showing it than in someone that has immigrated to a different country.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the things people go through for what they believe in. Right. It's incredible. And then you kind of took that and extended that with everything that you've done.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I'm sure your parents must be thrilled.
Yeah. I think, you know, for a long time, I think everything that I did was to make them proud.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, you brought me here. I'm going to show you that I'm going to become whatever you want. Yeah.
Yeah. I can relate for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I had to step away for a little bit whenever, you know, 2019, 2020. And I was like, I know you want this for me, but let me do it my way, basically.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be the same end result. They're still going to feel safe and secure in what I'm doing, but it's just not the way that they saw it.
You have your own path.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all do.
How did you become a dancer?
In kindergarten, we had two options. So we had karate and ballroom dance.
Oh, wow.
And of course, I did karate because I was a boy. And, you know, a couple of weeks in, I just was always on the bench and I was crying because my sensei was always using me as like the demo guy and he kept like throwing me around. So they were like, we're going to put you in dance. And then after that year, the dance teacher was like, you know, your son has some potential. You should bring him over. And from, I guess, age 6 to 15 when I moved here, dance became everything. Like, I would miss a lot of school. After school, my coach would take me and drive us about an hour away. We trained the whole night. Train every weekend, competitions.
Intense.
Yeah, I didn't have a summer break or a spring break or any kind of break for the whole time that I was competing. Yeah, but it was amazing because it was the best friends, you know?
Yeah.
It was like a group of 6 of us that were always together.
And they give you guys those options in school?
No, it was outside of school.
Oh, outside of school. Yeah. I was going to say.
Started in kindergarten.
Because everyone like from Eastern Europe, they're all such good dancers. Like,
right?
What do you guys have going on over there? I don't understand. All the amazing dancers all come from there.
Yeah. Ballroom in Latin is probably the second biggest sport in Romania after soccer.
That is incredible.
Yeah. And not a lot of people talk about it, but it's just, we all do it.
It would be interesting to like dig into the history of that. Like, how, do you know what I mean? Like, how did, because even the Latin countries are not that crazy about their own dancing.
You're right.
Yeah. I'm curious. Someone out there, an anthropologist, someone tell us.
Right.
That's so interesting.
Because the best countries, especially for like international style ballroom and Latin, are like England, Italy, Germany, and like the Russian countries, Ukraine, Russia.
Right. Even like tango. Like, you guys are so good at tango.
Yeah.
It's
it doesn't add up.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
And it's actually really cool to see how someone from so far away can take a culture and just embrace it and turn it into this spectacular
thing. That's a good point. I never thought about that. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. We used to watch, what is it? Dancing with the Stars? Like when it first came out like everyone was crazy about it. And I started to notice all the good dance. Well, they're all good. You know, the professional ones.
Right.
But they're all from like Romania, Ukraine. I was like, what is going on?
I know. It's crazy. That show for sure put it on the map or brought it back to people's attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a whole thing. People compete all the time. Like you said, you guys don't really have breaks. It's not a seasonal sport.
No.
It's just go, go, go all the time.
There's always a different age category or a different class or a different country or a different like tier.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So when you came here, is that when you decided to stop dance?
No. So my dance partner thought that I was leaving the same as me for a couple weeks. It was going to be the first break ever to visit my dad here. And then somehow we ended up staying here forever. But I tried finding somewhere to continue dance. And I was, for my age, I was really good. Like I had won the national championship in Romania before moving here. So when I came here, at the time, there were just not a lot of options, but I came to Miami actually. And this one guy was like, well, I have this girl that gave me a tape 3 years ago, but I don't think she's good enough for you. You know, check it out. And we looked, and then he saw my tape and he was like, well, you can teach here, but I can't teach you anything.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I was like, well, I guess it's just not time, you know, to do that anymore. So I wanted to become an architect. And I did, you know, that I pursued that throughout high school and then applied to a couple architecture schools. And then right as I was about to accept where I was going to go, my mom's friend said, oh, you know, you can go to UGA and get a dance scholarship. So I went there and I auditioned. I did like a Latin piece, a samba. And then I had to do ballet, contemporary, jazz, all that stuff for
you
the first time ever.
That?
No, at the time I couldn't. So I was awful at that. But because I was a guy, they accepted me in. They didn't give me the scholarship the first year. They gave it to me the next couple of years. But I was like, oh my God, I can dance again. Like this is a thing you can do in college. So I scratched everything off the list and I went to UGA and I danced for 2 years. And again, like fully into it. I was in a contemporary and aerial company. So like kind of like Cirque du Soleil, smaller scale. And every summer I would go to like day long, week long, month long intensives. And at Duke we had one, and then in New York City. And then I realized after my second year that I don't need a degree to go be a dancer. So I came back and I was like, if I'm a good dancer, that's all that matters. So I got an econ degree.
What is that?
Economics.
Oh, well.
So I did economics and dance.
I thought it was something that had to do with dance.
I know, yeah. No, I was like, I don't need a dance degree. Let's get a real degree since I'm in college.
That's actually smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good idea. And then as I was doing that, I realized that I'm never going to be able to provide the lifestyle that I want for a family being a dancer.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of my passion for this project, for Culture Architects, lies. I don't want anybody else to feel that way or anybody else to have to give up their dream just to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Because that's sad.
I
still wish I would be dancing. And I tried picking it back up, you know, 10 years after dropping it, but it's not the same.
No.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider doing something in that world, like maybe a school or something? I don't know.
My first business was sort of matching up tutors with kids in like arts and dance and music and foreign languages whenever it was taken out of schools, like 12 years ago, 15 years ago.
Unfortunately.
Right. I'd like to, yeah. I think right now I just want to build a community of people that want the same thing. And I think as a community, we can move mountains.
For sure. Well, you brought up cultural architects, so let's dive into that.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions.
I hope I have a lot of answers.
I'm sure you do. Let's start at the beginning. What is cultural architects?
So Culture Architects is going to be the first NFT collection that we're launching for the Forward brand. And to give you a little bit of background, I started Forward maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now. And it was supposed to be, or it was at the time, just a fasting supplement company.
Okay.
I do intermittent fasting. So I made this one product that was four products that I was already taking. And I was like, I want to have a supplement company. So I started it and I kept adding products. And at the same time, like you said, are you doing anything in arts? I guess I am. I wanted to help and support other artists. So I started the Artist Incubator, where basically I wanted to provide all the tools from like monetary to like management to finance to all that for artists so they can just focus on their art and I can help them make money with it. And so both of those things existed, but neither of them really had any tangents between each other. And then at the same time, having just sold my business, I was like, what do I do with, you know, for work basically, for money? So crypto was what was just coming up. My best friend from Romania had a lot of insight. So I started investing in that, and I was never really super passionate about crypto. It stocks in general and the way that financial markets work, not my jam. I just don't understand it. I don't want to read about it.
It just seems ridiculously boring to me. And
agreed.
not the complete opposite of like exciting and creative and where I want to be in my headspace. It's like way far, far away from that.
100%. So I just listened to whatever he told me. And then 7 months ago now, I think I bought my first NFT. And I was like, okay, this is cool. You know, it's art. It's a picture. It's a song or it's whatever it is. And again, I was like, I'm probably not going to get super into it. I'm just going to invest some money in it and hope for the best. And because I was never like very techie, mm-hmm. I never was on like all the forums. I suck at gaming. Like none of the things that you'd think you need to be part of the NFT community and the crypto community was me. And then slowly by slowly, I started seeing that there's communities forming around these projects. And I remember one of the first projects that I bought into that still exists today is Sneaky Vampire Syndicate. And I got attached to it just because that Romania and vampires. And I was like, oh, everybody's talking on Discord. What's Discord? So I started looking there and having conversations and meeting friends. And then the conversation moved to Twitter, which I hadn't used since college, 2012 probably. And then met more people there and just saw how open everybody was. And I was like, you know what I'm missing the most? Like I was traveling and I was meeting people, but I wanted community. I wanted somebody that like has, you know, a philosophy of like wellness being important to your life, like sleeping well, eating well, but also like having a balanced life. Like go and party and dance all night if you want to sometimes. And like, you know, go eat that cheap meal or have a week that you're just eating whatever you want. And having that balance so that you can be happy and like content with yourself enough to then follow your passion.
Right.
Because I think if like, you know, the mind, the body, the spirit, everything's good, then you have clarity to be like, that's what I love. That's what I'm going to go for. And I trust that it's going to happen.
And the strength.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
to explore those ideas.
Right. Like,
get scary.
Right. So I decided that I don't want to sell supplements to people anymore and explain to them why it's so important to fast or why it's so important to eat, you know, to have electrolytes before you have your liquids or why it's so important to have all these mushrooms and the benefits. I thought I'm going to build a community that already understands the value of wellness and just give them the things that we already make.
Right.
As being part of a community to support that community.
That's cool.
Yeah, and actually, my favorite book currently that I'm reading is called. I'm gonna have to look it up because I forgot it. Recapture the Rapture by Jamie Wheel, and that's where I found the term culture architects. I was trying to figure out a catchy NFT name. Yeah. And
Recapture the Rapture, you said. Yeah. We'll link it down below too.
Perfect. Yeah, I also met him at the summit in Austin and he gave me the book and I was like, oh my God, I feel so special.
That's so cool. Yeah. That's my favorite thing in the world, to meet an author and see them like as real.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so special.
He was just a speaker. Yeah. I didn't even know he was an author and I loved the way he spoke because he was so funny and like cutthroat and like went for the things that we, you know, sometimes turn into fairy tales, like, you know, all this, like,
we embellish a lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And he went straight to it and he said, you know, if you want to build a community that lasts or a culture that lasts, you can't base it around the vanities of the human world. Like, you can't, you know, you can't have a figurehead that's going to want like the most money or that wants like the most attention or like sexual favors or whatever, like a lot of the cults and cultures in the past.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, how do we do it? So I talked to him for a while and then he gave me the book and I liked the idea of architecting and like designing the culture that we want.
Yeah. So what is that going to look like for you?
So step one, we just found our artist maybe a week ago. So they're
congratulations. They're
working. Yeah, thank you.
That's a big step.
Man, it took me forever.
I believe it. Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'm just going to make something that looks like something that already exists. And I was like, I don't want to copy someone.
Same. You know,
the whole premise is like, I want to do something that's us. Like, how do we put that in character form? And it's interesting how everything kind of fell in place. So I got the name and then I found this artist and I was just exploring. I was like, I really like your style because the style is very like Lego-like.
Yeah,
it looks, it kind of looks 3D, but it looks like cute Lego. And I was like, you know, we're not going to do humans, so we don't exclude any like gender or or
groups.
Culture or anybody, right? We want to be inclusive. So we're doing spirits, like elemental spirits. And one alien.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
Stop. That is so cool.
So we can all see for like within ourselves what more there is. And it was interesting. So I very much believe that the metaverse is cool. I embrace it. Most people still think that the metaverse is gonna be a one metaverse that we're all gonna go in or not go in, but it's there's tons of metaverses and tons are being built every day. So I love that and I want to explore that. I don't want to shy away from that, but I also love nature and like the bodies that we have and like the world that we have and exploring it and traveling it and feeling, you know, sand between my toes and the waves crashing against my body. So I want to have both. I'm very much into balance. Like I want to have this and that. I don't want to just pick one thing. So we're going to have with the first collection, we're going to have a big library of wellness education. So everything from sleep, nutrition, breath work, yoga, workouts, everything. And part of that's available to everybody in our Discord group, whether or not they're going to be holders, because why not bring up everybody, right? And then we have like a more in-depth one that gets updated more often for the holders of the NFTs. And then we have two more aspects of like community. One is in the metaverse. And I bought a plot of NFT Worlds, which is a metaverse built on Minecraft open source.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they were really smart because there's 100 million users in Minecraft already, like 100 million kids that grew up knowing how to navigate it, how to work it, how to build in it. And now they can make money building, right? They can bring those skills. And the interesting part that I didn't know at the time, these little blocky characters that I fell in love with, the guy said, I can give you the file to plug them straight into that metaverse.
Oh, wow.
So from the very get-go, they're going to be metaverse ready.
That's amazing.
And that means that we're going to be able to hang out there, have community events, have galleries, showcase music, showcase events, ideas, you know, anything that people are working on. And then the most exciting part for me is we're also going to buy a piece of land in the real world. Somewhere that the community is going to vote on, probably South America, I would think, some Costa Rica type country. And we're going to co-own that as a community. So everybody that's going to hold the NFT is going to be part of a DAO. And the DAO is going to vote and hold the interest of the land. So we all share the wealth. It's not just like somebody's building a project, getting rich and peacing out.
Because that happens a lot.
All the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's amazing. So then what would happen with the physical place? Like, do you guys have plans? It's okay if you can't reveal them yet.
No, for sure. I'm super open about this. So long-term plans, and I think long-term in this industry is like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Like really long-term. But 3 to 5 years, I'd like to have a big, big plot of land that we develop so we can have events, we can have festivals, we can even use it as like a Airbnb place, basically, because the idea is the more we can influx money and affect lives, the more that we can do for the community. So, you know, as money comes in for people wanting to stay at the Airbnbs or come to a conference there or come to a workshop there, then we can put that back in the fund and support artists, support people's ideas, support businesses that come out of the community. So we're going to have a physical location that we can all go and hang out.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What kind of people do you think is your like your the hopes would be, right? Like your ideal community member.
I think that the most important aspect of the community or for somebody to be part of the community is to be brave enough to want a life for themselves that's better than what they have. To kind of want it all. So, and I think that takes a little bit of a rebel, Like you have to be a little bit of a, I'm not going to go with, you know, what XYZ tells me or what, you know, the news tell me or whatever. And stand up for yourself and believe in yourself. So it's more of that like want of like, I want something better. I want something more. I want it all.
I think it's perfect timing what you guys are doing, because as you know, like everything the world has been through and is going through, if there's one benefit I would say that has come out of it, is that people going all of a sudden, hold on, this isn't, why am I doing this? Right. You know, this isn't what I want. And, you know, those light bulbs are going off and people are starting to question and really, like you said, being brave enough to find the life that they really need to be living.
Yeah. I think part of why it's that we're doing is because we've seen what's possible. Yeah. And you have to prepare, you know?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot, we're privy to a lot more information that before we weren't. You know, the forces behind the veils were just doing whatever they wanted to. And we're like, it's okay, because I have, you know, my car and my restaurants right. and whatever, and all's good.
I go to work, I come home, leave me alone.
Yeah. But I think some boundaries were crossed by our leadership and by the media. And a lot more people are not okay with it. And they're speaking up, they're not okay with it. I think, personally, the way that we're going to sort of ebb and flow in our civilization... The next step is going back to smaller communities. And whether that's Discord channels or metaverse or real life, I think we're going to go back to like, this is what we all want to do. And you can be part of more communities, right? Like you want to be like part of your salsa group community. And like you guys all love salsa and then you all love stocks or you all love NFTs and saving animals. And you can be part of these little communities. So you have everything that you need and it's ran in a way that you're happy with and content with. Not, you know, in an election, half the population is unhappy at best.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just a mess for
everybody else.
For everyone. Yeah. Until the cycle starts all over again.
Yeah.
So can we talk about Discord really quick? Just in case.
For sure.
Yeah. So what can you explain what Discord is?
Yeah. So I actually wrote a book. I wrote an ebook for people. I'm not a writer, disclaimer, but I wanted to write
a book. You are, you wrote a book.
I guess you're right. I'm a published author. I wrote a book because I wanted people to go from zero to buying or minting their first NFT. And part of that is Discord. And we also have a Discord channel. And most of the people that I'm talking to about this project aren't super heavy into NFTs. So they have no idea what Discord is. And ours is a very safe server, so nobody hacks it, so it makes it harder to join. So I made a video, too, that goes with the book. So I'll send you the book so you can attach it, and the links to the videos are in the book. But Discord is basically an encrypted. So encrypted just means nobody's going to tell you what to think, what to see, no ads, no manipulation of the data. Chat room, in a way, right? So the way that I think of it is the comment section of like your social media plus like events and announcements plus like community. So a lot of NFT projects, most NFT projects use it because it's a safe space to learn about it, to talk about it. You can have, you know, spoken word chat rooms, and then you can separate the different channels that you can see for different memberships. So like if somebody just wants to see what you're about, they can see that, but then you have a certain area for just the members and the holders. And you have announcements and events and, you know, upcoming projects. Your roadmap is usually there. So like the explanation of what you're doing with your project and what's next. It's sort of like it's your clubhouse.
Yeah. Would it be safe to say it's like a updated chat room that's safe?
100%,
right? Like no one's gonna steal your information.
Yeah. Nobody's gonna steal your information. Also because people always want to steal everything, I recommend, and it's in the book too, to turn off your DMs for Discord. So as soon as I open Discord, I turn off my DMs. So nobody, because people come and portray like, you know, I'm so-and-so from the project.
Yes.
Here's a free whatever. Here's a link to our whitelist. And
that's a good
bad
tip.
Actors.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Yeah, so we turn that off, and then I don't allow friend requests on there.
So if someone wants to get in touch with you,
I send them over to my Twitter.
Right. Twitter's like the first
yeah.
first step.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if we're cool That's on Twitter smart. For a little bit, yeah, yeah. Then, you know, we'll take it to the next level. And I was actually thinking on the way here, I was like, I'm going to NFT LA next week and I'm reaching out to people both in groups and on Discord and on Twitter. And we kind of got to the stalemate of, okay, how do we like get in contact with each other beyond just writing on each other's feed? Because my DMs are closed, your DMs are closed.
Exactly.
You know, your profile picture is an ape. Like, I don't know who you really are. So I think I want to do like a Telegram or a Signal group and share that link so we can talk kind of off.
Yeah.
Offline. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. It's it's new.
It's all right. I think that's what's so exciting about it. Everything's so new and it's literally being built as we speak. So you have to navigate all these different things.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. What advice would you have for someone that's like, okay, I don't really understand this, but I'm excited about it. I want to jump in. What would be like the first step?
Business or NFTs?
Well, actually, let's do both. Let's do NFTs first, because that's the, I feel like that's the new target term, right? Like the one everyone's going crazy over.
So what I did, I allocated a little bit of money as play money. And I said, I want to use this money to educate myself.
Yeah.
And I went, and again, this was 7 months ago. I went and scrolled through OpenSea, which is the largest marketplace. Looks Rare. I feel like I should talk about Looks Rare too, because it's really good. And I just looked and I was like, I found super cheap projects. I think at the time I bought them for like $20 to like $70. Like that was about as cheap as it's going to get. And I just bought a couple to see what the process of buying it and like linking my MetaMask and like transferring the money to the MetaMask and all that stuff. And then where it would show up. Does it show up? What can I do with it? Can I send it to somewhere else? Can I sell it?
Right. Yeah. So, there's a learning curve.
100%. Yeah. And I made mistakes. I got scammed. Oh yeah. 100%. That's why I wanted to write this book and talk to people about it, because I heard. Yeah. I've been part of. And I think everybody that's still in the industry has been part of straight up scams. Like I had the whole, oh, hey, you're on the white list and you get to mint early. And I was like, amazing. I want to mint right now. One Ethereum later. It was an expensive mint too. I was like, here's an Ethereum. So silly. But, you know, don't make that mistake. And now that's why I want to write and talk about it. And then I also had the rug pulls. So the projects where they're like, this is going to be an amazing project, amazing art, we have all these, you know, all these plans, and then you mint and they take their money and then they ghost, they disappear.
I know how it works, I get it, but I just don't at the same time. Like, how does that get to happen? It's crazy.
Yeah,
it makes no sense to me.
I mean, I guess if you think about it, like if you were a photographer and you were like, you know, pay me a deposit for like your shoot on Saturday, and you did that to 10,000 people and then disappeared.
You know, that happened.
It's the same
to us.
Thing, really.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So for our wedding, we hired this amazing photographer, great reputation, you know, an artist, not just like a camera snap away person, like an artist. Everything was great. He went above and beyond. And then when it was time to get our pictures, he fell off the face of the earth. Like everyone,
forever?
He had high profile clients that like were celebrities. Everyone was looking for him. Nobody could get a hold of him. And I was devastated.
And so you never got them?
I did.
Okay.
like, you know, years went by. We had our firstborn. And I like every time there was a milestone in our lives, I was like, oh my God, our wedding pictures. Like the one thing I cared about.
Right.
So my husband somehow found him on some sort of social media platform and reached out to him. And he was like, hey, can you please? And he was like, actually, yeah, I have all your pictures here.
Wow.
So that was like my birthday present that year.
That was a good birthday present.
It was amazing. Like, I'm like, thank God. After like 6 years, we got our pictures.
Did he grow a conscience or...
He never really explained what happened. I don't know if something happened to him, you know, like with his family or mentally, like if he just went through something. I don't know, but it was a shame because he was an artist or is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now he's a not trustworthy artist.
I don't actually know what he's up to, but his work was incredible. Anyway, I didn't mean to hijack here.
No, but the good takeaway is that happens in the world today as well.
Because you're right. A lot of people are like, now, yeah, it added another layer. You're right. It does happen. So for people that think, in real life, I diminish the percentage of risking.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it happened to me.
Right.
And to a lot of other people. It wasn't just me. It was like a number of us.
Yeah. And a lot of that happens. Like Fire Festival, right? Everybody thought they were going to go to an island party and they slept on in tents and nobody showed up. So I think, you know, it's easier because there's no face-to-face interaction. You don't know whose wallet it goes to unless you like really check into it. So I was part of that. Then I remember going to the moderators of the Discord actually were still there, like not knowing what was happening because they were in the owners and they held like a call. And it was so sad. So many people were like, you know, I spent $600 on this project because I wanted to get into NFT and I wanted to change my life. And they were like, I'm not going to ever do it again because this was a massive chunk of money for me. I can't, you know, like now, you know, whatever, I have to rebuild my savings account or whatever it was. So it's sad that these individuals are deterring so many people from like trusting the industry and seeing what's possible. But I think the more of the people that stayed are outspoken about it and outspoken about education and about, you know, there's a lot of rug pull accounts and channels now that just like target these people that want to scam and expose them before it's too late, usually.
That's really good. That's smart. Yeah,
for sure. I mean, it's important because they're getting smarter. The more that we're getting smarter, they're getting smarter.
There has to be some sort of accountability.
I agree. Yeah. There should be.
Yeah. The people's court.
There we go. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put them in the ring.
Exactly. That's I think what your take on it is it's right where it's at. You know, it happens everywhere and it shouldn't stop you from getting involved in something that you feel excited about.
Yeah. You know, I did my first Twitter Spaces the other day and a question that came up with was defining success. And a lot of people think they want that Cinderella story of, you know, a year ago, I minted this Bored Ape for $200. And today it's worth like, whatever, almost $300,000. Plus I got the mutant that's worth $50,000, $60,000. Plus I just got airdropped some ape coin that's worth $100,000. But that's not going to happen again. You know, it was a one and done kind of thing. There's plenty of other projects that do amazing and that offer you value and that you can make money through. But if you're targeting that Cinderella story of like paying $100 to make $1 million, you're going to be a target for scammers because they're going to promise you, you know, that, but they can't deliver that.
That's true. Yeah. You can put yourself in that position and try to find those projects that are, everything's going to be through the roof and it's going to be amazing. Yeah.
I remember in one of my like crypto groups that doesn't usually talk about NFTs, this woman came and she was like, hey guys, I just bought this NFT. I want to tell you all about it. I'm in Discord. And I was like, you know, be careful of XYZ. And she got really mad at me and she was like, no, everyone in the Discord is saying that we're going to bring the floor up to 5 Ethereum and we're going to win. Oh. I'm like, of course, like everybody wants that, but it's not up to the people that want it and say that we're going to get the floor to a certain amount to actually get it. And the project flopped. But that's sort of the next layer. So it can be an intentional, you know, scam. And you can kind of figure out if it's that based on, do you know the people in charge? Mm. What have they done? Is their Discord and their Twitter full of fake followers and bots? But then there's people that genuinely have good intentions, but they're probably young, inexperienced people. Yeah. And an NFT project is a business at the end of the day. It's not, again, like it was maybe a year ago. You just put some pretty pictures and they became valuable. So I think a lot of people want the best for a project, but they don't have the tools or the knowledge or even like the patience to see a project through. Like if it doesn't happen in a month, I'm just going to throw my hands up and go. So it's, I think it, you just have to be a little bit more discerning nowadays.
For sure.
Like, who are you buying this from? What do they want? Who are they working with? And do I trust them? Like you would in stocks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's I think that's the smartest way to go about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump to business.
Let's jump to business.
Yeah. Any advice for new business owners or anybody that's thinking about having their own business?
Yeah, my opinion and the way that I do this is I think you should just start today. A lot of people have, you know, they're like, I'm going to spend a year planning and writing things and learning things and I need to learn more and this needs to be more perfect. And they end up doing nothing.
Yeah.
And they just quit. So I think
perfection paralysis.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you're passionate about photography, ask your friends like, hey, I want to go take some pictures of you. And then you take those pictures for free or like they buy you a drink after. And then you have enough pictures to maybe go on Airbnb and be like, hey, guys, like when you're in Miami, I do Airbnb experiences and it's $49 for 2 hours and you get 10 pictures. Like, just do it. Whatever the smallest step that you can do today, like take that leap because it shows you that you can do it. Most of the time you have, you know, the idea of like, I won because either you did it or somebody liked it or somebody paid you.
Right.
And you can build on that confidence and that momentum. But I think also same as NFTs, like do it because it's something that you love.
Yeah.
Don't do it because you want to make a lot of money.
Right. Have your why very clear.
100%.
Because it gets rough. And then that why, it's what's going to keep you afloat when nothing else, you know. How long do you think before you can see a business flourish? Like, do you have a time frame that you give yourself?
I think it depends from business to business. And apropos to doing it for the right reasons, I wanted a supplement company because I've seen so many successful exits. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mimic this one guy, Aubrey Marcus, who sold his supplement company for $260 million. Nice. And I was like, that's going to be me.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the same thing and then exit and it's going to be awesome. People are going to be like, yeah, money. And it didn't do anything. Like I got the product and I was struggling to like explain to people why it's so good. Everyone that tried it liked it, but it just wasn't my passion.
It wasn't.
And as soon as it didn't flow, I wanted to quit. Yeah. But my trampoline park, completely different story. I built it and I was there and, you know, every day and we had it built and we were in a shopping center with one of those mega churches.
Mm.
And every Sunday there were 5,000 people that went there. The first day that we opened the doors, it was just like packed and it stayed packed from day one. We didn't have like the whole 2 years to like make it or break it. It was just. So I think it depends. And I don't think you can plan that because I helped somebody else open the trampoline park and I copied the same demographics. I found an even better spot. I made the trampoline park look even better and it failed.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
There's, you know, I feel like you could do everything by the book. There's an element of magic that gets thrown in there. And sometimes it's just not there.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. You know, I think we all have like a purpose in our lives and a calling. And it's not. We're not all going to be business owners.
Right.
We're not all going to be, you know, we're not going to have our podcasts or be writers or be artists. Like, but find what that is and like be true to it. And it's going to be exciting no matter what you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we try to just become something because it looks cool. And that usually doesn't work either because there's going to be no monetary success or you're going to hate your life.
Right. That's so true.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely. I mean, if someone would have asked me if this is what I was going to be doing, I would have been like, no way. No. Why would I just like talk to people?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at like my life and the things I value, it makes perfect sense, you know? But yeah, you have to find what really speaks to you for sure.
How did this call you?
So I feel like I've told this story a couple of times. So the people listening, I'm sorry. So I was an English teacher for a long time, for like a decade. You know, it's like all I ever wanted to do was be around books. Yeah. So as soon as I got my college degree, I went straight to teach. And that's what I did for a long time until it started not becoming the thing that I loved anymore. You know, I was not looking forward to going to work. And so I just decided, okay, I need to change my life. And I left. And, you know, like how you mentioned your mom went through stuff being at home. Same thing for me. I was not happy just being at home.
Yeah.
So I decided, okay, I need to go back to books. I need to find a way to be around them again. So I started working on a literary magazine, which is where Miami Lit was born.
Oh, yeah. I get it. That's so funny.
Yeah. Again, it wasn't flowing. Just because the community that I wanted to build, much like my classroom, I wanted it to be diverse. And for a literary magazine, it gets so much more specific and closed off, and even elitist at times. And that's the complete opposite of what I wanted. So it stayed dormant for a couple of years, like 2 years. And then, you know, my husband had been suggesting to me, why don't you turn it into a podcast? And he just kept nagging me until I said, okay, I'll try and we'll see if I like it. And then I fell in love because it has right. all the components that I cared for. Yeah. So that's how it happened.
That's amazing. You know, even you said community, like you wanted a diverse community.
Yeah.
I think we all crave that in one way or another.
Yeah, we're social creatures.
Right.
And we definitely thrive off of each other. So I think it's important, you know, and if we saw anything with the past like 2 years, it's how devastating isolating yourself can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I try to outrun the pandemic.
Really?
Yeah.
You were like hopping.
I was. I went to LA in the middle of it, but I lived in like we'll call it a startup house, but it was more like a commune. So I had a lot of people around and it was okay. And then I went to Tulum because that was sort of like the place that everybody was running away from New York and Miami and LA. And then the beauty of it was I found this community that was all of a sudden as a group, we're all running away from the pandemic and trying to like
stay
connected and have interactions and like have sort of like a normal social life while exploring and while, you know, trying to not be quarantined.
That's so did you guys make it like did at any point?
Yeah.
You did.
Because Tulum was open and then we went to Brazil and for like the first month it was open and the second month it was getting more closed and then we went to Mexico City and then we went to Barcelona and Greece and Copenhagen. I caught Copenhagen for a little bit and I went to Romania back home for a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah. And then it just kind of caught up everywhere. I think it was like that second wave or third wave or God knows which wave. But you know what I realized on the road, as much as I thought I could work and travel, but I wasn't building anything. I was maintaining at best because you want to experience everything and you want to stay up and you want to eat all the things and you want to, you know, do all the things. So that's when I decided to come back to Miami because everybody was coming back to Miami.
Yeah.
That's why I think that's so beautiful about Miami right now. It always had such a diverse culture with like the Latin culture especially. And then, it, you know, New York and LA and Chicago came and brought more of the city culture. And like I think what's created now is just everything. You have it all.
Yeah.
You know, you have the people, you have the conferences, you have the business, but you also have like the dancing and the culture and the music and the people. The food.
The food. Oh my God.
So good.
So good. So many great places here. So since you brought up Miami, let's talk a little bit about Miami culture.
Yeah.
And your perspective it's an interesting one because as you just mentioned, you've been all over. So what do you think makes Miami so special? So extra. Because
so
we're extra.
I think it's a combination of people and then even like the broadness, the breadth of diversity within the one city. So like I said, the people from everywhere kind of coming here and bringing stuff with them because of the pandemic. Like there's so many smorgasbord from Brooklyn and then LA opened in Wynwood 2 weekends ago. That's a Brooklyn thing, right?
Yeah.
So, and then there's Salt and Straw, which is from LA in my building. There's so many places that are like only specific to like New York or LA or somewhere, and they're bringing it with them because they're like, I'm not just going on vacation. I'm moving to Miami. Yeah. I want to bring the part that I love to Miami. And then I love like the difference between, and I don't know all the little neighborhoods, but the beach side, which is like music and dancing and like parties and beach right. clubs and like a certain vibe and riding your bike and all that stuff. And then we live in Wynwood because my girlfriend's a fashion designer and she's from New Orleans.
Nice.
So she didn't want to live at the beach.
Yeah.
So we found like the artsiest place in right. Miami, and it's
perfect.
It's so crazy how much art and how fast it changes.
Yeah.
So we're straight in the middle of it, and I swear every 2-3 weeks a number of walls get repainted with a new mural. Like there's so much new art all the time, and so much coming in and so much changing, and also so much construction. But it's like really cool to be inspired all the time, to be around so many other people that like want to create and want to liven up. That's it. That's what Miami has. It's very lively. Yeah. It's alive. It's never a dead moment.
Right. I think you put it beautifully. I love that too. It just feels like there's always stuff going on, but not in that rushed New York kind of
right.
way. In more of like a let's create kind
yeah.
of way.
Yeah.
Which is what I like.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Everything's always like all the events or even all the parties are always around some sort of education or some sort of building or art or supporting a community or something like that. It's not just like,
right,
let's work, and then let's party so we forget about work.
Exactly. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. That's exactly how it feels.
Yeah.
How do you stay inspired to create?
Usually travel inspired me. I always wanted to visit new people and see new cultures and see new perspectives. But I think what I found is that it wasn't the traveling, it was the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helps that there's so many people from all over the world in Miami right now. So every conversation that I have is so inspiring. And somehow we all have some sort of tangent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either it's wellness or acro yoga or dancing or living abroad or traveling or NFTs.
Yeah. Exactly.
A lot of NFTs. Honestly, I it surprises me because, again, I've never been like a Reddit type person or blogs and chat rooms and all that ever. But seeing how fast and how many opportunities there are with NFTs and how much we're learning and doing every day is just mind-blowing. Like 2 days ago, well, 2 weeks ago, maybe, if that, Bored Ape, Yuga Labs, the owners of Bored Apes, bought CryptoPunks and MeBits.
Mm-hmm.
Huge news, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then like 5 days later, in a tweet, they announced, tomorrow we're going to drop our ape coin. They drop it the next day. They give it for free. You know, 11, the club / residences, 11 Miami, are like, we're going to take the ape coin to buy an apartment with us. So it becomes real. And then 4 days later, they announced that them and like 5 or 6 other of the biggest blue chip NFT projects are creating a metaverse together. And they just raised $450 million in funding. So
it's crazy.
It just moves so fast, and it shows you like how much we're learning and we're listening. Like I think as a community, unlike old traditional businesses, you listen because you're nothing without your consumers.
Right.
Right. If you're Chevy, you've positioned yourself in the market and in like, you know, all the ads and all the way that you built your structure. Nobody's going to be like, oh, I'm unhappy with how Chevy's, you know, acting towards their employees. I'm not going to buy a Chevy anymore. But with NFTs, if you don't do what the community is asking, then we're just going to leave and go somewhere else because they're going to do it. So I think it's nice that there's like this relationship between like the project owners and the holders because we care about each other.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most special things. And,
yeah.
You know, I like you. I'm not really techie, but that's one of the things that I really like about the space, and I can see so much value in it.
Yeah.
It really is a symbiotic relationship. And like you said, there's so much listening, you know, because there's no other way to go about it. You can't just like bully your way through something and be like, well, this is the way I want it.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, so many other voices. Yeah,
you're not the only NFT, no matter what.
Exactly.
Somebody else can do it if you don't do it.
Exactly. And there's so many great ones out there.
Yeah.
So many amazing artists getting involved.
It's true.
Yeah.
And it's bringing artists work as well.
Yeah.
And recognition.
Mm-hmm. The artist that we work with, she was a teacher as well. And she was able to quit her job to do art full time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is so that the murals that you were talking about the other
day? Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
A lot of her murals are in Wynwood because that's where she started 10 years ago.
Wow.
So hers I don't want to make it sound like it's a rule, but usually hers don't get painted over.
Wow.
Just because they've become almost historical.
I love that.
They've been there for such a long time. Yeah. I think one got repainted like maybe 2 months ago. It was like the first one, just because it was so old already. Okay. It was losing its luster. It wasn't what it was at the beginning.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. it's been a whole decade. But yeah, it's definitely changing so many people's lives.
Yeah.
And finally putting, to echo what you said at the beginning, the artist is able to put food on the table.
Right.
And a lot of the middleman stuff is done away with. So I think that's so important. Why do you think art's important? I was having this conversation with someone yesterday because we were talking about how so many people get pushed to, be doctors, engineers, lawyers, and art is kind of like, okay, whatever. Go do art and have no food.
Right. Be a starving artist.
Yeah.
As you asked that, I thought, I wonder why we think the other jobs are so important. Mm-hmm. And I think the other jobs are important because the previous generations, like our parents and their parents, had just dealt with like war and losing everything, whether it's, the Second World War, like communism or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their priorities were eating, having a roof over my head and
and rebuilding society.
Yeah. They didn't have the luxury to think about like their wellness and their self-care and their mental health and spirituality and all that stuff. So I think, throughout society, there's a book called The Fourth Turning. It basically shows how, really good book.
I'm gonna write that one down too.
It's weird. It's 20 years old, but it's only now becoming relevant because of crypto. Like they predicted.
Really?
Basically this pandemic and how the world's changing and like the war and everything. They knew this was going to happen because we're in the time when basically, according to them, America is either going to like change massively or fall.
Yeah, I think we all feel it, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's a turning point for
it
sure.
Is. But the beauty of it is what comes, the first turning that comes after the fourth turning is the place where like art flourishes. Where we build, buildings that like people come and visit and last forever. And like everybody's dancing in the street and, art's everywhere. And people have the space, both mentally and like physically, to be inspired and to like enjoy what they do it and be appreciated. So I think it's time basically for art to matter again. And this time around, it's not going to be, churches and cathedrals and whatever it was in the Vatican.
Right.
And sculptures, it's going to be digital, so we can all look at it all the time. Yeah.
And buy it.
Right.
Last time, art was such a big deal. None of us would have been able to afford it.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody.
Yeah, most people.
Most people wouldn't have been able to afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very elitist. And also, like, the artists, right? There were, in Florence, there were 5 artists, and everybody in Europe bought them.
Yeah.
Yeah, now it's like unlimited artists. We all have an equal voice. Right. If you like my art, you can have it.
Yeah.
Then I'm an artist. Now it's nice. And it's so inspirational and it makes you feel good. And I think I'm going to get a little spiritual, but art vibrates differently than, mechanics or anything else. So just being around it feels different. It makes you feel good.
Yeah. It has such an important function in society for... It reaches that part of you that's not tangible.
You know,
like obviously we all know we need a doctor and a lawyer and, an engineer. But there's also that other part of us that needs to be nurtured. We need to look at beautiful art.
Yeah.
We need to feel connected. Yeah. Listen to a good piece of music.
Listen to a good podcast.
Oh my God. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Let's do that, please.
Really, you know, and also creating, like you're creating, or like, even if I'm not a writer, I wrote something, or like I doodle on a page, or I go and like do a little samba move in the park. Like, it's enough to just like be a little bit of artist. Yeah. So just feel better.
Yeah. What was it? Was it Picasso that said like, there's a little artist inside all of us? I'm totally butchering that.
Probably.
I don't remember. or every child's an artist, something like that.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then as we grow, it's like they beat it out of right. you. Like, no. Yeah.
Right.
Education. You will not spend 3 hours painting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You will become a factory worker because school is a factory.
That's a whole different conversation.
That's a whole topic, right?
But
right.
It's, the state of our schools, it's terrible. It's sad.
It is.
What's happening? Yeah.
I think I think the NFT world is going to change education as well.
I would hope so. I was having that conversation the other day. I think it was with my husband. How amazing it would be for people to become educated in that space. Like in the, not get educated about the space, but receive their education through the space.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
For sure.
Yeah.
One of my really good friends that I met actually in Miami through the NFT space, who I think would be great on your show, Ish.
You think he'll come on?
Yeah, of course he'll come on. I was actually thinking about reaching out on my way here today.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, he's speaking at a lot of conferences and stuff, but he wrote a course, like I think it was like an online like visual course on like NFTs, teaching people about NFTs. And now, like you said, he has two NFT collections, and he's including that education in with the NFT. So you buy the NFT, you get the education on trading and selling and buying NFTs. Plus, he has every week like somebody talking about crypto or somebody educating you on like security in this space or whatever. So that's the kind of people that you don't mind, you know, getting their NFTs regardless of what the value is going to do in the future, because he's giving you value now.
Exactly. And the value is intangible. I mean,
right.
You're getting an education, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And a support group. You know, we all talk and we all chat back and forth. We hang out when we're in the same city.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I would be interested in joining that group.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's called Rich Apes Club.
Rich Apes Club. Okay. Yeah.
He has a Bored Ape, so this project's a derivative.
Oh, maybe he was at the event on Saturday.
He was in LA.
Oh, no, then he wasn't.
He's going to be at NFT LA as well. And then he's coming back here.
Are you guys doing the San Diego con? I think it starts April 1st.
No, just because Bitcoin Miami is April 1st.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like there's right so here. Much happening.
I know.
Yeah.
And then there's something right after. And I think we're going to do an event actually after Bitcoin Miami.
Cool.
So we'll get you over there.
Yeah, that would be fun. Are you for cultural architects, are you going to have like in real life events?
100%. So I think one thing that we're doing differently, and I don't know, I suspect from like an investment perspective, it's probably like not smart, but I don't care. usually you sell an idea and a hope, and then after you give me the money, I'm going to go buy and create all the things that I promised you for. And thankfully, I'm lucky enough and I believe in this project enough that I'm doing all this ahead of time. So that's why I already bought the metaverse land before we even have a character and an NFT to sell. And I'm building an advisory board and the education board, and I'm adding these channels to the Discord already with the breathwork and the meditation and all that, because it's important to me. And like, I want to create it for anybody, even if we never sell an NFT. And I'm talking to Ish so we can go in. There's a big festival on April the 6th, and we want to co-sponsor. And it's crazy if you think about it, co-sponsor, because I can't sell anything yet. Mm. And, you know, I'm okay with that. Even if I can't get your money, I want you to be happy. I want to provide something for you so we can connect. And
well, that's where that why comes in.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it all somehow... all the pieces of the puzzle come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited about your project, though.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
I think it's very needed, because Web3 world, especially now that people are becoming aware of it, they think it's this just thing that lives somewhere, and you're just going to be sitting in a dark room on your couch with your computer or device. But the way you're presenting it, it's like a, like you said, it's a balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's going to be super cool.
Yeah. I'm noticing a lot of Discords are adding like a mindfulness meditation channel because so many people are staying up all night. Like you see on the chats, you're like, you know, it's 6 a.m. and I'm just now going to go to bed for 30 minutes so I don't miss out on like any price fluctuation. And I'm like, yes, that's great. But also like sleep.
Yeah.
What are you going to do if you win? Yeah. It's not sustainable. And you're not going to feel good even if you do make that money that you think you're going to make.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very much about balance. You can have it all. You can have the balance and the health and, you know, the success in the space.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here and sharing. And I can't wait to see this flourish and all the amazing things that you're going to do.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you to everybody listening or watching. We'll make sure to have Alex's information linked down below so that they can reach you. Oh, wait, before we go. Your Instagram name.
Yeah.
That is, the, I love it. How did that come about?
So, Little Bitch in Life. I used to be really serious about like building my social image and like being an influencer and people paying me to like go stay at their hotels and whatever. And so I was spending a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of attention, not taking care of myself.
Mm.
And it just mattered too much. And one day I was like, you know what? Screw this. And I asked my girlfriend, I was like, what's like a really funny name? And we were traveling at the time. So she was like, you should do Little Bitchin' Travel Superstar. So Superstar was too long. So I was Little Bitchin' Travels for a little bit. And now that it's not just about travel, I changed it to Life.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah,
Little Bitchin' Life on Instagram, on Twitter. And then on my Instagram and my Twitter, the Discord is going to be there.
Yeah.
And if you guys come and write Miami Lit in the general chat on Discord, I'll send you guys a little something special.
Oh, okay. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the first one.
Perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, that's so kind of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so now goodbye for real. Goodbye. Thank you again to everybody listening. Make sure to reach out to Alex to keep up with all the cool stuff and to become a part of it. I think it's going to be awesome. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you.